This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's, yeah, they have asked for that, really.
You can laugh, after the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like Mick.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I'd like to stay alive for 6 days.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down Swampfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawnee man?
Hats off to the unsung hero of the weekend, Liverpool's Roberto Firmino, for making the longest selfless run of this or perhaps any other Premier League season. When Mo Salah picked the ball up in his own half on Friday night, Firmino took off from an even deeper position, busted his ass to catch up to his strike partner, 100% certain that he was never going to receive that pass. The defenders were reasonably certain too, but you know, they would have looked a bit foolish if just on the off chance Salah had rolled the ball into the path of his much better positioned teammate.
They weren't actually, Owen.
They weren't what?
That's where you're wrong. The Southampton defender in front of Salah actually pointed as though he thought the ball was going to be going to Firmino. There was two defenders. There was one was chasing him back and you thought Salah had left it go too long because he'd allowed a second defender to kind of get goal side of him. But actually he finished it well because he took a little shift to the left and then basically shot through the gap between the two Southampton players. But the guy who had been in front of him, I can't remember which defender it was, had actually, you could see him point like this behind.
Oh no, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying like, you know, in the back of their minds, they must have known Salah was going to shoot.
Well, no,
but
I think the opposite.
But it would have been too embarrassing for them to just allow him to roll it. This wasn't a Van Dijk worrying about Sissoko versus Son argument. This was two really good finishers, either of whom were certainly Firmino would have scored if he was put through there.
Oh, I'm not sure. I think,
no?
I mean, I'd like to think that Salah calculated all that and he thought, no, it's just not, it's
the
not going to be.
Percentage play was the pass. It's Salah's a greedy old.
It's not going to be the ideal.
You know, he gets a lot of goals that way.
Position for him. But instead, he just decided to go for it. I mean, I think Southampton maybe had been watching what had happened in previous matches, where there have been a couple of incidents where he has ignored the option to pass and thought, well, he's surely going to pass the next time he's in.
He's due a pass. He was due a goal. He was also due a pass.
But they should have known better.
Welcome, everyone, to Monday's Second Captain's Football Podcast. Murph is also here. Hi, Murph.
Hey there, all.
So much football on the World Service this week. Champions League quarterfinal week. And on Wednesday, it's going to be a bloodbath. John Delaney versus the Oireachtas Committee on Transport, Tourism and Sport. Those guys take no prisoners. To hear all that, you'll need to be signed up to... We're not all that. We're not going to play all 6 hours of that hearing. But, you know, to hear selected highlights, you'll need to be a signed-up member of the World Service on secondcaptains.com. We're going to start the Champions League build-up today. Jack Pitbrook is at Tottenham's training ground on the eve of their game against Manchester City. He's also been to their spanking new stadium, so he can tell us if that is going to be a factor in the Champions. In fact, in the two home games they have against Spurs in the next little while. I got an email in here from... Well, actually, we got an email from Argentina last week from World Service member Dara Boylan, who informed us that Racing Club had won the league and one of their fans had decided to take his grandfather's skull with him to the obelisk in the city centre so as not to miss out on the celebrations. Kenyu seemed unmoved by this occurrence, so I wonder if this one is going to shake you out of your lethargy.
Okay.
The journalist John Milton tweets, last week we saw the Racing fan taking his granddad's skull to the celebrations around Buenos Aires. Today we're off to Cucuta, Cucuta,
Okay.
My Spanish isn't
good. Just go for it. I mean, we're not going to
get confident, stupid.
Cucuta.
Yeah, Cucuta.
In Colombia. Cucuta.
I love Cucuta.
Cucuta in Colombia.
Cucuta.
Cucuta.
It's okay. Yeah, that probably makes more sense, actually, in Colombia. Where I've watched so much Narcos, Ken, and I still can't get Colombian pronunciations right.
Well, the guy they had playing Pablo was a Brazilian, for a start. So I'm not sure the pronunciations and the accents were all spot on, but continue.
We're off to Cucuta in Colombia.
That's much better.
Okay, this is John Milton guy tweeting that we're off to this place in Colombia where 17-year-old Christopher Jacom, murdered the previous day, was taken from his home and to the match in his coffin.
Oh my God.
Yeah, accompanying this tweet are pictures of the fans with the coffin hoisted high in the middle of the terrace. Apparently his team were losing, but as soon as his coffin entered the stands, his team equalised, game ended 1-1. There's a follow-up tweet to say, the report says his ultras group entered his home and, in inverted commas, received permission from his family to take him. Can't help but wonder how willing his poor old ma was, says John.
That is rather macabre.
Well, that's definitely more.
That shocked you a little bit more.
Well, more than the school one.
The school was long gone. The owner of the school was long gone, is what you're saying.
I think so.
Isn't it shocking to you still?
Still, though, I suppose it's probably what he would have wanted.
Thanks to Dermot O'Brien for pointing out that story to us, and also for suggesting that maybe this become a regular slot. I don't know what you would call it, crazy things that South American football fans do with their dead.
Or more just maybe decapitations generally, because I actually was in the Greater Drogheda region this week, and I went to see Oliver Plunkett's head in the cathedral, in the church, in Drogheda. Yeah. There's a, you know, a decomposing, not very fast, but a decomposing head lying in a church in County Louthan, and you're looking at me like I just told you.
Well, I mean, if it was brought around to celebrate,
is it any less weird to have it in the same place all the time in a church for 400 years?
I don't think that's necessarily that strange.
Report on sport, please, Ken. I was about to say report on skulls. That will be the topic of the slot if it ever happens, though, Dermot. Report on skulls.
Well, it was all set to be the best day of Matt Doherty's life. But then Raul Jimenez pulled out a Wolves wrestling mask. And apparently this sealed Wolves' fate in the eyes of some football men. We'll get to that.
People aren't actually saying that, are they?
I'll tell you one person who's saying it, Troy Deeney.
There's a bit of me that wants to say something nasty, but I won't. But I'm glad he put that mask on. He can wear it out as well. Now he's a loser. So, yeah, enjoy the mask, but we got the victory.
I've got to ask as well, that goal, him enough goal, do you think it was offside? It would have been cruel to lose 2-1 to that.
No, I thought it was a good goal, personally. I thought it was a good goal. I thought it was poor defending from my point of view. Don't get me wrong, he's a top, top player. Like, I watch him and I think he's a nuts. Like, he's very good. Plays the number 9 position on his own really well. Great finish. But, yeah, I didn't see the mask thing, so I'm quite happy I only saw it now, because I probably would have lost my head if I'd have saw that. So, yeah, I think you've got to wear the mask and do all that stuff when you know you're going to win the game.
Like, what? Lighten up, Deeney. Like, this is the best day of your football career. And this is what? Luther Blissett, sitting miserably in the stands, watching Watford get to the cup final. Jimenez will be embarrassed. Putting on masks is disrespectful. Score a goal and you celebrate with your fans and teammates. That's where it should end. If you want to be a cartoon character, go and get another job. Says Luther, somewhat crotchety in his old age, Blissett. I mean, well, I don't understand. Like, it's not like he put on a mask of Jimmy Savile. Like, I mean, it's just what was so bad about it?
Can you describe what the mask, how the mask looked?
It was a Mexican wrestler mask in, like, the Wolves colours.
It had Wolves logo all over.
He'd obviously got it made up or whatever. I don't know if he's used it before. I mean, he's from Mexico. He scores a great goal in the semi-final. Ably assisted by Matt Doherty.
These same football men would take issue with players who take their shirt off being booked. Seems like certain types of exuberant celebrations are celebrated. Of course Mo Salah should be able to take his shirt off, and I think he actually should. But equally, I think if you want to pull a mask out and do that, they didn't lose because Jimenez pulled out the mask. I would venture to suggest.
Troy Deeney happens to disagree.
Well, he didn't even see it. He didn't see it until afterwards.
Yeah, but you know, fate saw it. Fate saw it.
Matt Doherty saw it.
Who did Aubameyang do that before with Spider-Man mask?
Black Panther.
Black Panther.
Wakanda Forever, Ken.
Was it Aubameyang or Lacazette?
I think it was Aubameyang.
Really? He has done, I think he's done a bit of Spider-Man before. Facundo Sava, remember him?
Yeah, that's all I remember about him.
He had Zorro, or was it Zorro that he did? The McBurglar, I don't know. It wasn't as impressive a mask. I mean, I actually liked Jimenez's mask. Sorry, I didn't realize it was against the spirit of the game.
Sure, it's all a good laugh, Ken. I'm just showing Kenan on the Black Panther Aubameyang mask.
So that's a big production. I mean, that's almost a head and shoulders job.
Looks like he took that from the set. I mean, that's a professional looking setup right there.
So, I mean, again, I didn't see the problem, but I suppose he wasn't playing against Cajones, Mr. Cajones. Sorry, Aaron. Cucuta, Mr. Cucuta. It was an amazing game. A bit better the Sunday semi-final than the Saturday semi-final. Watford's coming back from a position where it all seemed lost, thanks to Gerard de la Feu, who's a friend of mine said, I sent a WhatsApp saying, I'm not sure about the goalie there. This was on the winning goal, the de la Feu, where he kind of ran across, you know, beat the defender for pace, got to the ball first, and then hit a very early shot, but just rolled into the middle of the goal.
Both of his goals were so delicately struck. They were beautiful.
Yeah, and my friend said, well, you know, I think he just hit it earlier than the keeper was expecting. But the first one, that's a disgrace. I mean, he telegraphed that one. I was like, he telegraphed it. Oh, that's, you know, higher standards than me when it comes to, you know, whether that was a good goal. I mean, I did not see that one coming.
No.
So I think, I mean, the idea with the telegraph shot is everybody knows what's about to happen. Nobody was expecting that to happen.
No, people always talk about football as art and all this kind of highfalutin stuff, Ken.
Oh, yeah.
This arty-farty nonsense.
Go on, Luther.
John Giles might say. But I do think that's the closest I've seen to a footballer hitting a ball like it was a paintbrush. I can't even articulate it. I'm going to slow down here. He brushed the ball. Nah, I've given up. Looked like he was painting.
You're almost giving Gordon Strachan a run for the money and the articulacy he takes.
So, I'm on slightly safer. It's a slightly safer topic.
It's true. No, he did.
Wading knee deep into a paintbrush metaphor.
It was a lovely. It was a lovely strike.
Almost like a brush stroke, Ken, wasn't it?
It was.
Thankfully, Simon has edited out the last 30 seconds. I sound smart. Thanks, Simon.
And for an angry man as well to pull out a shot of such delicacy, because according to Javi Gracia, he was bullying De La Feu. He was stomping around, angry not to be in the starting lineup, but just like a ravenous hound waiting to be unleashed on the wolves. And poor old Matt Doherty, who had scored the opening goal with his typical clever off-the-ball movement, being at right place at the right time, second goal of the season, then put in the ball for the second goal. He obviously thought, yeah, we're going to be in the final, and I already believe we're going to beat Man City in the final, but didn't work out that way. And it has to be said that this was not a good day for Nuno Espirito Santo.
Well, I saw he lost his temper, which we weren't expecting.
Well, I'm not surprised he lost his temper. I mean, he made an absolute hames of it. I'm sorry to have to say that this was a real mess. Nuno, with the team under siege, decides that what's required now is a little bit of time wasting. He says, what can I do to make some, to waste a little bit of precious time here? I know, I'll take off Ruben Neves, my best player. He's looking a little tired. He is the best player, but luckily he's done his bit out there for us. I'll stick on Ryan Bennett. And then a couple of minutes later, there's still, that was 86 minutes, 89 minutes. It's all, you know, I've got to take someone off, but it's got to be an attacker. It's going to have to be Diogo Jota. I'll take him off and let's stick on Ivan Cavallero. 2 minutes later, penalty to Watford. Deeney, goal, 2-2, extra time. And suddenly Nuno's sitting there on the bench, surrounded by the heartbeat of the team. Actually, João Moutinho was then the next player to be off. He genuinely might have been absolutely exhausted. But it's just one of those, you make substitutions to I was going to say tactical substitutions, but they're gamesmanship substitutions. And unfortunately, you realise I could have done without making those substitutions at that moment.
Troy Deeney, fairly Troy Deeney, that penalty, didn't he? There was no brushstroke about that one.
Well, you knew what was going to happen. I mean, everybody, even the commentator, I think, was like, he usually goes for power, observes the commentator. I mean, every time I've ever seen him take a penalty, he just lashes it into a central area, but quite high as he did. And I suppose even if he stood there, it might be difficult to save, but stand there. Don't lie down. Like, that's what you should be doing against Troy Deeney. Troy Deeney, the post-match interview, it wasn't just all gloating over poor old Raul Jimenez. He said some other things as well.
I looked at it from a selfish point of view. I was literally just had a little toast with my family, and it was just like, I've come a long way personally, you know, from not just, people always go back to jail, but, you know, before that, you know, just grafting away and watching my brother do all this thing and trying to be a footballer, and I was just trying to support him. And yeah, a long, hard stint to get here. And that's kind of the emotion that come at the end. And I'm not going to lie, I was holding back the tears, because it's like, I used to pay to play football. What, 12 years ago, I was paying £10 a week to play football. And now I'm going to be in the FA Cup final. Granted, against Man City, against a very difficult team, but I think every now and again you just have that moment when it's just like a wave of emotion kind of hits you. And I'm like, I'm a big tough guy that everyone knows, but it was just like, nah, do you know what, this one's for you and for everybody that was upstairs. That's who I just went up and said, like, thank you. Like, I had a moment with my mum, which was special. It was special, yeah.
That's wonderful to hear, Troy. What would be your message then to anyone that's thinking of giving up this game, that thinking the dreams can't happen?
Do you know what, it's not just this game. I'm going to go a little bit deeper. It's just life in general. There's always going to be setbacks. Don't believe in Instagram when people go, oh, it's all real life, everything's easy. Everyone's got bills, everyone's got heartache, everyone's got problems. So it's just one of them. And if you can continue the course and you can stay true to yourself, everything will be all right. And that's kind of what I do. I still make mistakes daily, and I'm still trying to be a better person, but personally, this moment is everything to me. I've got everyone that believes in me and everyone that trusts me here today. And
Troy there. What did we learn today?
I love the way the interviewer tries to bring it back to the football.
Oh, she thinks it's about football.
Troy's saying, I'm staying deep on this one, I'm afraid.
No, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to go
a little deeper than that.
Yeah.
Troy leans back on chair, takes out pipe.
Don't believe in Instagram. Maybe Troy should get on Twitter and see what real life is like. You know, in cases, there's people out there who spend too much time online and think the world is great. Mm. Think everyone is having
Twitter
a great
time. Twitter is
a
necessary palliative.
He was jailed in 2010.
Yeah. Well, he's...
In case people aren't aware of that, for his involvement in a pretty horrible... Watford FC striker Troy Deeney was recorded kicking one of the victims in the head. So, yeah. A championship footballer who attacked a group of students in Birmingham has been jailed for 10 months. So he's involved in this pretty horrible scene.
He's turned his life around, Owen, and he's offering a sort of... he does say, don't give up your dreams and it'll work out. I'm not sure. I don't think life is like that, actually. Except that it's probably not going to work out. And just be thankful to be alive. That's my philosophy. Mm. That's my message.
You're not on Instagram, kid, are you?
No, I'm not on Instagram. I mean, is it really nice? Is everybody being nice the whole time?
No.
I think it would annoy the shit out of me.
Yeah, you're not that far wide of the mark there, Ken. Don't worry.
Yeah,
you're missing a minimal amount.
I don't know. But yeah, forget your dreams. Dreams are delusional. Live in the real world for as long as you can. And, every second is a bonus.
Put that in a fucking t-shirt.
that's my that would be my advice.
Kennerly Fridge Magnet Company went out of business soon after a startup.
Eurelio Gomez, I don't know if you saw, he had a post-match interview where he
Are we
was
still
asked,
on Watford? You were loving this Watford stuff.
Well, come on, it was a good game. Like, I mean, there wasn't much else on, was there? We're not just going to talk about Watford, but I mean, for Christ's sake.
No, I'm enjoying it. Yeah.
Gomez has been playing the cup games, and he was asked then, you know, what about if you get dropped for the big one? And he was like, well, and he smiled broadly. He said, absolutely, you know, it's a squad game, and I'll be here, you know, if he needs me, I'll be here. And if it's Ben, you know, I'll just be sharing. Ben Foster said, if I'm asked to play, I'll absolutely refuse. Uriello Gomez deserves this and should play without a doubt. He has never let this club down. He never will. He was fantastic today. It will be Gomez's last game before retiring. So, I mean, it's a bit of a dilemma, kind of, for Javi Garcia.
Well, not anymore. If your other goalkeeper has said, I'm not playing.
Yeah, but, you know, if your other goalkeeper said, I'm not playing, and you're like, no, you are playing. It's the FA Cup final. Alex Ferguson. Alex Ferguson, never forget, won his first FA Cup medal, stepping over the bones of Les Seedy's dream. crunching the bones of Les... No, not Les Seedy.
Jim Leighton's dream.
Big Jim Leighton. Crunching the bones of Big Jim Leighton's dreams beneath his feet as he scrambled towards the medal. That was the way Fergie did it. And Javi Garcia, sure, he could indulge this sentimental, I'll play you in your last ever game of professional football at the cup final nonsense. But the temptation must be there, is all I'm saying. Even if everybody knows that the right thing is for Gomez to play.
We've seen how goalkeepers work now with the Kepa incident. All Gomez has to do is get there early, get out of the pitch, get warmed up, and don't come off.
I mean, this is particularly as Foster. I saw an interview he did with Mark Ogden last week, or came out before this game anyway. He was talking about the difference between winning the League Cup at Man United and winning it with Birmingham. So he's like, you know, we played Arsenal that day at Wembley. We were the underdogs, like you wouldn't believe. This is 2011. But we did win. When you run down the pitch and see all the fans going absolutely crazy, you see how much it meant to them. That will live with me for the rest of my life. To do something like that with the team at Watford, where it would mean the same sort of thing, will be huge for me. I won the League Cup when I was with United, but it was almost a given we were going to win the game. I remember getting on the coach. And I've just closed down his window. I remember getting on the coach after the game, and it was basically, right, training tomorrow, lads. We've got a Champions League match on Tuesday. It was all forgotten as soon as that. It was incredible. There was no celebrating, no reveling in it. That's the difference for me, you know. I just couldn't get my head around the fact that it was just another trophy. Do you know what I mean? If you win it with a team like Birmingham, West Brom or Watford, it does mean so much more. Mm. And it's true. I mean, we'd seen the City game against Brighton the previous day. Not such a good game.
No.
They pretty much euthanized Brighton.
Yeah, but not even in a manner that was... They didn't even hit those heights where at least aesthetically it's pleasing. Oh, wow, amazing. Really well-worked goal.
It wasn't a nicely worked goal.
No. My point being that normally there's a few of those and there are lots of other chances and you're thinking, God, they're amazing. Even though they're not the most exciting team to watch, they're amazing. Whereas they didn't even hit those heights. It was more just they got their goal and then, well, Shane Duffy almost.
They are so massive, so dull. Not quite. That was Pep's praise for Brighton afterwards.
Duffy and Dunk.
So massive. I mean, if it was a computer game that you were playing in this game, you'd just be like, simulate game. You know, I don't have to sit through this one for whatever it will take, the 3 minutes. There was a lack of City fans there. City fans not in the mood to be told that the lack of fans in an FA Cup semi-final means anything about the size of Manchester City and their support. Simply the fact that they've been going back and forth to Wembley all season. The cup final will be their fifth appearance there. It was Community Shield, Tottenham away, the Carabao Cup final, and then the cup semi-final all at Wembley. The cup final, I can see Man City fans complaining already that they've confirmed it's 5:30 on Saturday. Last train back to Manchester is 9 o'clock. The FA obviously don't care about that.
That train back to Manchester, probably quite expensive if British rail prices are anything to go by.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be too critical.
No, I'm not being critical at all. I mean, who would want to go and watch that? No,
but people are being critical, as you're saying. People, how come they're not going and following their team?
Well, they don't have to sit through all these games. Man City fans do. You know what I mean? And pay
70 or 75 minutes of them at least.
And pay to watch them. You know, when it's kind of like, it's sort of weird, a game like that for City against Brighton. It's like either this is a win, in which case it's par, or something terrible happens to Man City today, which would be laughed at over. They're the two options. Mm. Like the win is just, yeah, well, at least, you know. And then there's always the remote possibility, pretty remote, to be fair. I mean, it's just an unfortunate feature of, you know, a lot of games these days, particularly city games, because I think their style is so kind of controlling. It's so overbearing for the other team. Like, you can't, it's difficult to get the ball off them. Other teams are more sloppy.
Other teams manage it for a period of this season. Other teams manage it for a period of the season, like in and around Christmas.
Teams beating City. Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah. I mean, I look back at those games and, like, Townsend's ridiculous shot flying in from halfway down the field.
That was outrageous, yeah.
You know, like, there was a couple of amazing goals that went in against them. I mean, I think it's five defeats they've had altogether this season. Four in the league and then one to Lyon in the Champions League, which again saw a couple of pretty incredible goals. But look, I heard one of our own, popping up in the press conference afterwards, asking Pep the following question.
Pep, you're scoring so many early goals in games. This is the third 4 or 5 minutes in three games. How, given you're not chasing games, how useful is that to conserving energy for what's to come?
You see what Miguel's getting at there. His, conserving energy. This is Pep's response.
What's the most you ever lost on a coin toss? The most you ever lost on a coin toss?
That wasn't really that wasn't really Pep. This is actually what happened.
Will you hold still, please, sir?
No, he didn't. Pep didn't execute Miguel.
He did not execute Miguel
with a bolt gun. What he said was, "Oh, we didn't get to conserve energy in that game. Maybe that happens if you're 3, 4, 5 goals up, but no, that game was open. That game was open till the referee said game over." But the thing is, the very first thing he said in the press conference was, they were like, "Oh, Pep, you know, were you worried?" He's like, "No, not at all. Not after the first 10 or 15 minutes. And then I suppose, you know, in the end, they were so massive, so tall, but no, I wasn't worried." So you're kind of like, Pep, you know, don't break kayfabe here. You're supposed to pretend at least that you were like biting your nails or scratching your head or something. But look, too good. So Kevin De Bruyne, City are staying in London over the next week because what's the point in going back to Manchester? I mean, it's like the same thing the fans are complaining about. It's a pain for the players as well. So they have to go across to the Tottenham Stadium to play there tomorrow night. They asked Kevin De Bruyne, what do you think of the stadium, Kevin? It looks pretty special. I don't care about the stadium. I care about the team we play. Everyone talks about the stadium like it's something special. Everybody has a stadium. Everybody has supporters. They'll be up for it. They'll probably be a little more excited. But in the end, it's a stadium with supporters. So
correct. That's the correct answer.
I like Kevin De Bruyne. What can I say?
Oh, Kevin, say something amazing about this amazing new stadium to feed our stories that we've already written. Give us some generic quotes, please. He's like, "No, I'm going to tell you what I think." And that's
play the game, De Bruyne.
Everyone has a stadium except for Athlone Town, as we know. They have no The Tribune, as Giovanni Trapattoni explained. They have no The Tribune.
Well, Spurs have The Tribune.
Spurs have The Tribune. Oh, absolutely coming out the wazoo. De Bruyne is saying the players have had a massage. We know Spurs have had a rest. We tried to take every hour. Against Tottenham weren't playing this weekend, of course. He says, you know how heavy the schedule is? I think people underestimate how the fixtures come that quickly. You can't think about it. We don't even have time to have a rest ourselves. So how can we think about what's going to happen in 4 weeks? We're just going to play Tuesday, hopefully play a good game. That's basically what Miguel was getting at there. The fact that they've got to play every 3 or 4 days for this entire month. It is kind of insane. So now we are going to see if they can... It's 22 wins in 23. What?
I mean, it's opening up now, isn't it? For them. They have one in the bag. They've another one, which they should really be winning the cup final.
Yeah.
So then you're talking about Champions League.
You're talking
Spurs
about...
Spurs a very winnable quarter final, and they're still favourites for the league.
Yeah, they are. So it's... Although, you know, they do have... slightly tougher games.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Liverpool have to play against Chelsea, and Hazard is, like, really good whenever he plays at Anfield. But, you know, City's run in. It's obviously the Tottenham game, which is kind of weird coming after these two matches. You know, I guess a lot about that game will depend on what happens in the matches. Although, clearly, I was about to say the game is less important for Tottenham than for than for City. But the game is also important for Tottenham in terms of their mini league against the other teams for the top four.
Man United,
same kind of situation. That game is at Old Trafford. Palace away, where I think they only drew last season. I can't remember I think it was just a draw. And then Leicester, who've already played them twice this season, beaten them once, and they drew the other game in the Carabao Cup, but lost on penalties. And they're also quite a good side at the moment, doing well at the moment.
Well, yeah, but then we do get into this analysis at this stage of the season. Would you rather play a team of a decent quality like Leicester, who have nothing to play for, compared to your Burnleys and all this kind of stuff, who are fighting for their lives? See, I think you prefer to play the higher quality team with slightly less motivation.
You probably would, and there aren't actually many teams left in the Premier League. Because of the relegation situation, two of them are Fulham and Huddersfield already gone. It's almost certainly going to be Cardiff. So it's not as though there's this usual thing of, well, we're playing against X, but they're fighting for their lives. But then again, those sorts of situations, you've seen them so often. Like, a team that really needs to win doesn't necessarily play any better for that. Mm. And a team that is kind of playing for nothing, like, sometimes just plays as though they're having a great
let
time.
Let it all hang out. Mm. I mean, there is also as well, if you're playing teams 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, a lot of those players, like, the intrinsic motivation at the end of a season is often, if I get 5 goals in my last 5 games, maybe I'm going to get a big money move to this club that we're actually playing against.
Yeah.
So maybe the motivation on a team basis is hard to pin down, but every player's actual motivation is really big.
So you mentioned Liverpool at the beginning on the Salah goal, which was a great goal to kind of get back scoring. And in fact, just the match was an amazing match. Very exciting. Even the post-match interviews were quite exciting as people just randomly joined. Oh, here's Mo Salah. He wants to come in. Oh, here's Jamie Carragher running across the pitch. He wants to come in and take it over. And
there
then,
weren't
of course,
enough microphones.
And this now infamous incident where they both turned and walked away from Kelly Cates, which is honestly, you're just like, oh my God, what happened there? It was clearly they just decided, well, this is just the way we're going to move, from here to here. I think Kelly Cates put on Twitter that, they were going to interview Hasenhüttl in the tunnel. It would have looked weird if they didn't have anything to talk about on the way. And of course, no one had thought about how weird it would look just doing it the way they planned to do it.
Were people genuinely outraged at this? Like, I saw a lot of, I think it seemed to, Kelly Cates maybe took some of the sting out of it by saying, look, this was the plan. But quite clearly, there's no great mystery to it. This happens all the time where presenter throws to another presenter, they have a bit of a chat, and then that guy goes off and walks with the other person.
That's the bit that was missing, though.
Yeah,
they have a bit of a chat.
Exactly. So that was the problem. Neville should have given more of an answer to the main presenter before he started to walk away.
Well, it's like he almost whipped around. He whipped around as well as he began his...
But it wasn't some sort of mark of disrespect to the female presenter, as some people are saying it was. It was just a bit of a mistake on Neville's part.
That's the way it goes. When these types of things get out into the wider community, the wider social media community, us football fans all knew it was an unfortunate, production idea. But, we all know Gary Neville's not that type of player.
not that type of broadcaster.
So where were we? Shane Long, obviously scoring a goal. I don't know how many it is now, but okay, it was a good moment for him to get that goal. And Liverpool once again winning the last few minutes. The Salah goal, a big moment of release. And then Jordan Henderson steaming through like a train. To smash that ball in for 3-1. And a few seconds after that, I noticed my phone lit up with a little alert, direct message received. I looked at it and it was from Jonathan Wilson. And I read this in his Jimmy Nail, I've been home for Christmas for a couple of weeks, accent. Hendo's turned this game. That's all he said, just a quiet...
Wow.
Laconic, northern, yet intense and soulful, paternal pride that he takes in this young man, Jordan Henderson. We were speaking about him only last week, and I was suggesting that maybe Hendo was a bit rough around the edges, as a, you know, possession oriented holding midfielder, maybe he gave the ball away rather more than you would ideally want a player in that position. But when Johnson saw that ball slammed into the net, he knew.
He was only thinking of one man.
I suggested maybe he's better as an 8 than a 6.
Oh, nice. God, that's pathetic, Ed. What? Try to ingratiate yourself with Wilson like that.
Why am I trying to ingratiate myself? I mean, it was a point. I mean, the point, it's a serious point. Fabinho was playing as a defensive midfielder. Henderson came on with a brief to run up and down, not to sit and strategize in
the
centre.
Are you saying someone took the shackles off Jordan Henderson?
The shackles were off. The shackles were off and he was tearing around the pitch, celebrating as though
free
every...
from the Jurgen Klopp straight jacket.
As though every blood vessel in his body is about to pop. To which Wilson replies, he's obviously better as an 8 than a 4. Why are you using Dutch notation? Well, I mean, Klopp says 6 and 8. They're the way he describes the two positions. But ideally, with a properly guileful 10. England could win the Women's World Cup and the Nations League this summer with Weir side captains. So... there you go. The pride is strong. He, you know, he keeps it under his flat cap. Keeps
it under his flat cap. Regional pride.
But it's beating away there.
Fuck this. It's the first night here. We need to get out and party.
Well,
Newcastle, totally different town.
Totally different town. But they are. I mean, Klopp, full of praise for Henderson. Bobby chased the ball in the 80-something minute. Cam's completely down. Sees Hendo running like a crazy devil in the box. Really, the boys are a fucking bunch of mentality monsters, he said. You'll probably have to bleep that out, he said. He knows the broadcasting regulations.
Mentality monsters, I love it.
Yeah. It's so mental, though, because people are watching this Liverpool game going, you know, it's theirs. You know, like, it's written in the stars that Liverpool are going to win the league this year. And then it's like City, you know, absolutely cruelly, decisively end some team inside 8 minutes with 2 early goals. And it's like... well, yeah, but it is a championship form, you know? It's not really what we're looking for in championship teams. It's not like cruel precision and...
the narrative title is only has only got one name on it. But Klopp saying...
the bookies paid out in that one.
I want to mention the Klopp-Henderson praise because, you know, we have talked about him before, not just playing for Liverpool, playing for England, you know, kind of, is he really, you know, a sort of a...
yeah.
We've been among the doubting...
you have been among the
doubting. The doubting Tomi... we said Henderson says the goal, or Klopp rather says the goal meant so much to him and to us. He's just a fantastic boy. He deserves all the praise, but he doesn't get too much of it. From my point of view, Hendo is a brilliant player. He's our skipper. He's a fantastic character. If I had to write a book about Hendo, it would be 500 pages. So I'm very positive. The most difficult job in the last 500 years of football was to replace Steven Gerrard. In the minds of the people, it was like, if it's not Stevie, then it's not good enough. And he's dealt with that outstandingly well. He can be really proud. I like him a lot. But it appears as though this... he says, when I came in and thought first about the team, Hendo was a box-to-box player. We made him a number 6, and that's good. I think it's helped him a lot to play in different positions. I told him already that doesn't mean he will never play as a number 6 again. He thinks it makes sense. That's absolutely true. We play different systems. So it seems as though Henderson actually spoke to Klopp before this game or during the week and was saying... he doesn't just have to play at the bottom of the midfield triangle. He can also run about a bit. Mm-hmm. If, you know, that's what you're looking for. Don't forget, I can do that as well. And I wonder if that's what we're going to see a little bit more of in the last few games with Fabinho playing and Henderson playing as more of a kind of tearing up and down type of
player.
Where
to next?
Just mentioned that Seamus Coleman has been nominated for Player of the Month. I kind of look at him a little bit like the way Jonathan Wilson looks at Hendo, you know. As like he was my son, although I'm not old enough to be his father, but I do take pride in his achievements. Battling back from pretty bad few months, and nominated on the Premier League website, you can vote for him too
for Player of the Month.
Player of the Month, I think he's up against like Bernardo Silva, who else? Andy Robertson, Mane.
Ugh. Okay, I was going to say, if there is no Liverpool players on the shortlist, this is definitely the sort of online vote that we could hijack.
I think Liverpool played Everton this month, and didn't score any goals.
I thought we were analysing him around the time of the internationals as though he hadn't regained top form. And yet he has been nominated for the March Player of the Month.
Well, there you go, Owen. There you go.
In your face, Irish critics.
In your face, us. obviously, Everton beat Arsenal. It's another. I mean, that whole four team race for the third and fourth places is very interesting, and Arsenal really screwed that one up. They look to be the best positioned team, but now everyone is saying, "Oh, four of their last six games are away from home, where they're utterly useless, having kept a clean sheet all season." Away from home.
Now it's Spurs in third place on 64, Arsenal are on 63, Chelsea are on 63, and Man United are on 61, and they've all played the same amount of games, which makes it very easy to... You don't have to get the abacus out, as people always say this time of year. You can work out where each of them are in relation to each other, no games in hand or anything like that. And yeah, that's really tight.
Yeah, it's going to be good to follow. And though, you know, three of those teams have to play the top two, United... Chelsea and Tottenham all have games against the top two, so can influence the title race as well. I just want to mention Barcelona. Owen, I was watching them Saturday night. They were playing against Atletico Madrid and beat them 2-0, but I have to say, I wasn't impressed with them at all.
No.
First of all, Atletico Madrid were playing with 10 men for more than an hour of the match because Diego Costa got sent off for nothing, it appeared to me. He's done nothing. I was waiting to see on the replay. Diego Costa's obviously elbowed somebody here. But all he'd done was speak to the referee.
Go on.
It turned out that what he said to the referee wasn't nice at all. And I still thought, well, what's the yellow card for? You know, why have you got a yellow card in your pocket? Show him the yellow card, and if he says anything else, then show him the yellow card again, and that's game over for him. But instead he just whipped out the red, and you're thinking, oh, come on, you know, as a spectator, this has got a bit of a Man City Brighton look to it the rest of this game. But in fact, it wasn't like that. Actually, Atletico, who in fairness, if you want any team who's going to give a good account of themselves with 10 men, it's probably Atletico. And it was so kind of even. Like, Barcelona didn't... You wouldn't have known that they had an extra player, which is so different from the way they used to be, you know, a couple of years back. I mean, I say a couple, I mean 8 years. When if you lost a man, you were finished. Like, they just would always be where your missing man wasn't. You know, you were going to... This is going to get ugly. And they're not like that anymore. They eventually managed to win the game, but only because Suarez scored an absolutely brilliant goal out of nothing, like whacking the ball in from 25 yards, making a little bit of space for himself. Then Messi scored immediately after that because Atletico were like, oh, it's over. But Atletico could have won the game. I mean, Simeone was making attacking substitutions, which you don't usually do when you're 10 men away to Barcelona. But that is how much he thought, well, okay, he also knew we need to win because we're so far behind. Like it's 9 points now, I think, that the draw is not really in use. But I just thought, looking at this, like Barcelona are, you know, obviously one of the strongest teams in the Champions League. And I think would almost be fancy to win any game that they were in against any of the other teams. But something about that performance made me wonder if they are actually a bit more vulnerable. I mean, Messi is obviously brilliant. But the team around him is not. Like, Coutinho is a ghost. Like, I don't know what's gone on with him. I cannot understand why how he can be so bad. Well, because we're talking about, like, simple technical things. I mean, he's a brilliant technical player.
Well, they used to say when any player couldn't fit into that Barcelona team that it was because they were so hard to break into. It's hard to impress Messi and get into that style. But that was all when it was the Iniesta, Xavi, Messi thing, which had come up through the ranks together, essentially. Well, you know, a little bit of poetic license there. It was a real defined way of playing, whereas this is different. Loads of players have come in the meantime, Suarez and these kind of players, and they've been brilliant. So I presume that's not an excuse, that he's in some way overawed by the Barcelona culture or by Messi, playing with Messi?
No, I don't know what... I don't think it is that. I mean, it seemed like they were very welcoming to him. And obviously, he's got, like, his mate there, Suarez, who's, like, you know, obviously a senior figure in the team and Messi's best mate. You know what I mean? It's like, socially speaking, it's all kind of set up. Although apparently he's living in like the house that formerly was occupied by Fabregas and some other failures. It's just been an unbroken string of Barcelona flops who've lived in this house.
I can't imagine Messi staying too friendly with you if you don't produce on the pitch, though.
No.
I think he might start freezing you out there, though.
Well, I think it's also kind of the embarrassment. You know, there must be kind of an embarrassment. Someone like Coutinho is not used to being around people who are better at football than he is. You know, he's usually the best player in whatever team he's played in. And now he's not. And I think some players maybe struggle to deal with that a bit. I think Zlatan certainly did. His situation was more complicated by his ego and the fact that nobody liked him. You know, whereas this is like a kind of a quiet failure. Like a guy who's just, I don't want to say bottling it, but like there was a moment in the first half when he managed to, he played like a little 1-2 with Suarez and he kind of swished past the defender and you're like, that's exactly the kind of thing I would associate with him. Then he's got a one-on-one from sort of 14, 15 yards against the keeper. Just a weak shot. Like you're used to seeing him whip that in, no problem. But just a weak shot, Oblak saves it easily. And you're kind of like, I don't know. I mean, we don't know if Dembele is fit to play against Manchester United, then I guess he'll be playing, not Coutinho. It will be interesting to see if maybe the, you know, in the way that Naby Keita on Friday night seemed to remember that he was once quite a respected footballer by the familiar sight of his former coach standing there on the sideline, the guy who had been his manager at Leipzig, Hasenhüttl. Maybe going back to Old Trafford will, you know, help to jog Coutinho's memory of the time when he was once good. But at the moment, you're looking at Barcelona and thinking, if Manchester United played the way that they did against Tottenham, I know I keep mentioning that game, even though it was like a De Gea miracle show, but that type of setup where it's quite defensive, but with a lot of speed on the counter and a lot of intensity on the counter, I think they're going to get a lot of chances in this game.
Well, it's Manchester United against Barcelona on Wednesday. Ajax Juventus is the other game on Wednesday. Two crackers there. Liverpool Porto on Tuesday and Spurs Man City on Tuesday. So loads to be getting into on the World Service this week. We'll wrap up the report and sport right there.
Sneaks it in.
Great header by Newton, who now has a chance. And scores superbly.
This one drops in.
This is not just a dream, it's a wet dream of orgasmic proportions.
Marsh. Bell.
Messi.
Messi.
Goal. He has chromosomes in his body that belong to the Bengal tiger, man.
Lee. Interesting. Very interesting. Oh, look at his face. Just look at his face!
Like a Jedi Knight! No, better than that, a Templar Knight!
Right, Jack Pitbrook is at the Tottenham Hotspur training ground, ready to hear from Mauricio Pochettino ahead of the Champions League game tomorrow. Jack, the last time we had you on talking about Spurs was in January when you delivered a prophecy of doom that turned out to be entirely accurate. You saw the wheels coming off a little bit. So now we come back to consult the Oracle with three matches against Man City coming up in the next 2 weeks. What does Jack Pitbrook see in Tottenham's near future?
I don't think they have the legs to beat City in the Champions League, or to be honest, to beat them in the Premier League. I think that the bad run of form in the Premier League that Spurs had just come out of was kind of, had been in the post for a while, really, just because of how, you know, all the stuff that we've known for a long time, like not signing anyone in the summer, not signing anyone in January, barely having a midfield, really. They've been running on empty since probably Christmas, more or less. That did start to catch up with them. I did think they were better against Crystal Palace in the first game at the new stadium the other day, but I'm not sure they can really get back to classic Spurs in time enough to beat City.
Does the stadium change things a little bit? I mean, we've already mentioned the quotes from Kevin De Bruyne that the stadium's irrelevant. You've been to the opening games. I mean, surely it does change things a bit. I saw Eriksen was saying that Tottenham players couldn't hear each other. Whether that's good, I don't know. But it must kind of give them some extra energy. I mean, this could potentially be a real lift-off moment in the history of Tottenham.
Yeah, I think it will give them energy. And I think it did give them some energy against Palace last Wednesday. But I'm not sure it'll be quite enough to make a difference. I do think it will help them get fourth, for example. Like, they've got lots of easy, winnable home games left to come, like Brighton and West Ham, the kind of games they'll have to win to get fourth. But when I think about City, I just think I think City are so good at the moment at only focusing on themselves, not worrying about anything kind of external or extraneous. And in that sense, I do think City will be able to shrug off any impact that the stadium might have.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about City having been good, I mean, their form is incredible. I mean, they've won all but two matches that they've played in 2019. And, even at this point in the season, which is, you know, pretty high pressure and so on, it does seem like they're cruising through it. People have been talking about their fixtures and the cup runs maybe being a touch on the favourable side. But there's this kind of serene quality to the way they're winning games, largely because they seem to score in the opening few minutes of almost every match. Do you have any explanation for how or why they're so good at that?
I think, I don't know, to be honest. It must be conscience, right? Like, it must be something that they're trying to do. I'm sure they must know that the only way that you can compete in so many competitions at the same time is to conserve energy. And the best way of conserving energy is to score early and play the rest of the game at walking pace. I mean, that was so striking about the FA Cup game on Saturday, which I went to at Wembley, was that after City scored, they played the rest of the match at about 70%. And that's something which they've become really accustomed to doing. Like, it was just the same in the Cardiff game in the Premier League or Fulham away in the league a few weeks ago. It must be that they know that, you know, you can't play at full pelt two or three times a week every week until the end of the season. It'll eventually catch up with you. Like, in a sense, it's an interesting contrast with Liverpool, who are putting so much energy into every single game, far more than City are, which makes it far more entertaining football. But you wonder how sustainable that is.
Ken has fallen in love with Kevin De Bruyne in recent times.
I've always been in love with Kevin De Bruyne.
But in particular, it seems like maybe he was away, Ken. Maybe you didn't know what you had till he was gone for a few months this season. So Ken has asked me to ask you about this massive football brain in Kevin De Bruyne's head.
Well, it's because you were writing about this, Jack. Well, what I didn't realise was that he reckons he's got the best football brain in the world, which is a typically forthright Kevin De Bruyne opinion. What's he talking about when he says that?
Yeah, that is something which I heard from a contact of mine recently, that De Bruyne had said to a third party that he believes he has the best football brain in the world. It's followed him around his whole career, this sense that he has a level of football intelligence beyond anyone else. I remember I wrote a piece about this 2017, speaking to a guy called Hen van Hazenbroek, who was his coach at Genk, I think is one of his first teams, who said that when he started coaching De Bruyne as a teenager, he said he reminded him a lot of Johan Cruyff, in the sense that he's got this capacity to see the whole pitch that he's playing on, and to be able to play passes and see moves that nobody else can do. I think that was really obvious, particularly last season, when De Bruyne got so many of these ludicrous assists where he would, you know, like bend the ball 70 yards around three or four opponents to find the run of Leroy Sané or Sergio Aguero. You know, there's nothing wrong with the brain. Like, he can still see the pass as good as ever. And that pass to Gabriel Jesus on Saturday for City's early goal, that was like a classic De Bruyne moment, in the sense that he saw this very difficult ball to bend around the back of the Brighton defence, but this time he managed to exit it.
Yeah. I mean, when he's playing, when he's at his best, I think he's the best player at Manchester City. Maybe there's signs that he's kind of approaching that form again, but I do wonder. I mean, if Guardiola was thinking, okay, he's kind of back, I want to put him back in the team, but who comes out of the team? I mean, you can't take Bernardo Silva out of the team. So does that mean that David Silva would have to be sitting it out at this crucial point in the season? I mean, surely a player of his caliber.
Never.
You know what? How does De Bruyne actually get back in the field? Who has to step out?
Ken, I think you would be vindicated by the fact that David Silva probably would have to be the one to make way.
But I don't understand, Jack. I don't.
he's the greatest ever Premier League import. This is a disgrace.
I mean, that is all true, but he hasn't really been as good this season as last season. And I kind of feel like next season, the first choice midfield will probably be Fernandinho or a Fernandinho replacement, De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva. Of course, the other option they have, which Pep's done a fair bit this year, is to play Bernardo Silva on the right of the front three, which allows you to play an extra midfielder. And so if they were to do that tomorrow night, then that would allow them to play David Silva, Kevin De Bruyne and Fernandinho as the midfield three, which of course was the midfield three for most of last season. So ultimately it does hinge on the, you know, where exactly Bernardo plays, but Bernardo is the one player that they can't drop.
Jack, just lastly, some of the previews I've been reading of this game have talked about Tottenham's physicality, and apparently this is something that Pep is quite obsessed with, that he feels if you can handle Spurs physically, then you're okay. It strikes me as the kind of way that international managers talk about the Irish team or something like that, you know, as though Spurs are brute force and nothing else. Is there more to it than that, do you think? Is there enough about this Spurs team to cause a bit of damage to City on Tuesday night?
I wonder if he says that just because I think it was like one of the first games that Guardiola lost as City manager that would have been like October 2016. City got absolutely steamrolled by Tottenham at the old White Hart Lane. And that was one of those games where Spurs were in like peak physical condition and City looked completely unready for it. So I wonder if that's still in his mind. I mean, at their best, Tottenham do play like that. But like I said at the start, I don't think they're really playing like that at the moment. They don't really have as much force. Even in midfield, like back then they had Moussa Dembele and Victor Wanyama, who they now don't have. Or rather, they do have Wanyama, but he's not been playing much. So I can't really see Spurs destroying City physically in the same way, just because they don't quite have the same power anymore.
All right, Jack, we'll let you get on with the press conference there. Thanks a mil.
Cheers, lads.
He agrees with plenty. Just, it's always who's saying it. It's never what's actually said. 90% of anything is who's saying this, and 10% is what are they actually saying. So the 90% in Giles' case is, oh, it's that twat.
Right at me. John is the best football brain in the world. If I could be
that guy, he just thinks I'm an annoying twat. I'd never let you down.
I'd never let you down. But if you're talking about the press, which you're talking about, have this opinion of Guardiola, it doesn't necessarily mean the football people have.
Yeah, I think I do like Ken Early's work. He writes fluently and thinks cogently, but I think he's wrong.
The press come and go, as we know. You mentioned Ken Early. Well, yeah. You know, I wouldn't necessarily agree with anything Ken Early says about football.
He just thinks I'm an annoying twat. I mean, you know, what can you do? Can't please everyone.
I might just bring you back to a name you mentioned earlier on the podcast, Ken. Gordon Strachan, who has talked himself into a bit of a pickle. Well, he did so last week on the debate on Sky Sports.
Yeah. He was on the debate with Jeff Shreve's host, Sam Allardyce, former England manager, and Paul Elliott. I suppose the basis for Jeff Shreve's question was that Adam Johnson, who last played for Sunderland, was released from prison on the 22nd of March. He had served half of his 6-year sentence for engaging in sexual activity with a 15-year-old. So anyway, he's out of jail now, and Shreve's asks if, you know, if there might be a place for him back in the game, or, you know, maybe, I think he said the stigma attached with his particular crime would put clubs off. So we'll let Sam take it away.
He served his time, and he deserves to do whatever he does, wherever he can. He will get some obstacles if it's back in football, where people will not want him to be at their club. That's happened before.
You say obstacles, Gordon. Do you think it would be nigh on impossible for him to return to football if he was willing and he was physically capable?
Yeah, well,
because of the stigma that would be attached to his particular crime.
Well, here's the thing then. You know, we're talking about vile abuse and things like that. Say he goes onto the pitch and people start calling the names, have we got to do the same as it is with a racist situation? Is it all right to call him names now after doing his 3 years? Have we got to allow that to happen? Or do we do what we're trying to do is clamp down on it? Any vile abuse should be clamped down on. So if the club said, this guy's done his 3 years, and I think when we look about, and evidence shows that, I don't think many people get 3 years in prison for this. I think we've done a bit of research. So is it sometimes a footballer gets the big hit for the years in prison, and some people who are not a big name don't get as much? You know, so I think he's done, you know, I think we probably think that is as much as you could have done to this fella. And he's got to deal with it. He's got to live with that for the rest of his life now.
So, I mean, you can hear the pause after Strachan says, what's his exact... have we got to do the same as it is to the racist situation? And there's one of those pauses where it doesn't seem like anyone else wants to get involved at this point. Yeah, Strachan has apologised. He's given the response in the last 24 hours to a point made on the debate programme of Sky Sports from over a week ago. And having reflected on it personally, it's important for me to address the issues that have arisen. In no way did I intend to confuse or conflate the very serious issue of racism targeted at footballers with the potential verbal abuse towards a player who has been convicted of a sexual offence. Having reviewed the particular segment in light of the reaction, I fully acknowledge that the imprecise use of language in my initial response has left open a perception that should easily have been avoided. For that, I sincerely apologise. I mean, this doesn't sound like the same Gordon Strachan who was on the debate. You know, I mean, when he talks about imprecise use of language, I think that's what you could say. I mean, it's like a word salad. You know, it's like the words don't really join up.
No, I mean, I don't understand why he was conflating the two in the first place. And he doesn't really go into that detail. He explains in that apology what he got wrong without trying to further articulate what he was trying to say, which maybe is the best course of action at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he went and say, I'd like to take the opportunity to atone for that, to reaffirm my condemnation of the behaviour that led to Johnson's conviction, because it did sound there as though he was, you know, he's going to have to live with this for the rest of his life, you know, which is true, but there's also the survivor, as he's to convey my heartfelt sympathy and support to this survivor and to apologise for any unintended distress caused. There were reports then that Sky had said, we won't be using Strachan again. Well, nothing, no direct quote, but, you know, it is understood that Sky will not be. So, you know, I mean, Strachan kind of, I don't know what he expected to be talking about on the debate. It didn't sound to me as though he'd come prepared to speak about the Adam Johnson issue. Maybe he expected to be talking about, you know, is Levy going to let Pochettino spend some money? And instead he ends up sort of trying to quantify which forms of vile abuse are permissible, which, you know, and which aren't. You know what I mean?
Like I would be amazed if he wasn't briefed on what they were talking about, especially if it's something, I mean, I just know ourselves, you wouldn't just throw that at a guest, something that is so
maybe that's Shreevesy's style.
Who knows? But I would have thought that he would have been briefed and would have had something prepared or some sort of thought prepared.
Yeah. Maybe he needed to take a little bit more time with that one. It was an awkward one.
I can't finish up without sparing a thought for World Service member Aidan Fitzmaurice. Aidan got onto us last week to say he'd been watching the Flat Earthers documentary on Netflix while scoffing in disbelief at the incredible ways they'd allow logic to be bypassed whenever any evidence contrary to their belief was unearthed. But Aidan recently realised that he is no better than the Flat Earthers, as he applies the same ignorance of logic when he cheers on Joel Matip attempting to dribble the ball out of defence, even though it never works. I think you know where I'm going with this, but I just want to give you the end of this email first. I'm going for a walk by the beach to stare out over the horizon and think to myself, if Joel Matip can beat three men and earn a free kick, surely there should be a visible curvature on the horizon. So that's just for the non-World Service members to understand where we're at. Well, Murph, you know what I'm talking about. You saw what Joel Matip did.
Well, we were all, I have to say, he was, Aidan Fitzmaurice was never far from my mind throughout the entirety of the game on Friday night, because every time Joel Matip got the ball, I found myself just urging, go on, stick one in the top corner from 35 yards out. What a story it would be.
Yeah.
So he did good.
He did great. Now, there was one particular moment that he ran from his own half, took the ball unimpeded in his own half, but eventually, as he got deep into enemy territory, a couple of would-be defenders tried to check his run. Matip just gave a bit of a Salah swerve, actually, got right through the middle of them, rolled the ball to Salah for a half chance, which came to nothing in the end. But I'm sorry to report Aidan has presumably now joined the ranks of the Flat Earthers. If Joel Matip can successfully side through like that, then
point
anything
proven
is possible, or anything is impossible, maybe, Aidan.
Sure, he should be able to see over the curvature of the earth. Has Joel nobody Matip asked Joel, crane your neck and tell us what's out there?
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen.
Thank you, Kieran.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks so much for listening.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare insurance plans.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.